Welcome to this RCGP podcast on allergy with a focus on the GP with extended role framework. GP with an extended role, or GP were, being the new name for what many of us know as a GP with a specialist interest, or GPSI. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, e-learning fellow at the RCGP. Today, I'll be talking to Dr. Liz Angier, who led on creating the framework and who worked in an allergy service in a tertiary hospital in Yorkshire. She's the lead for external representation and collaboration at the British Society for Allergy and Clinical Immunology, the BSACI. She also teaches on the Allergy MSc in Southampton. She was a previous chair of the Primary Care Committee at the BSACI and has worked on different allergy guidelines in the UK and Europe. She's currently doing qualitative research on young people with severe food allergy who are at risk of anaphylaxis. She also has an interest in systems working and improving care of allergy in the community, which is, of course, very relevant for the GP were role. Thank you for joining us today, Liz.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for having us and for your interest in the GP with extended roles.
Let's start with a bit of an introduction and something about the scale of the issue. We all know that allergies are common and there's much that we can manage in primary care, but when we do reach the limits of our expertise, there are long waiting lists to be seen in secondary care, if indeed there's a service at all. Can you put this into context?
Thank you, Tony. I think one of the really interesting things about allergy is that it's a changing and rapid field. So we've certainly noticed in this country that there's been an increase in allergy with a doubling of numbers in food allergy between 2008 and 2018, although those numbers are probably levelling off now. There's also been a trebling increase of anaphylaxis over the last 20 years. Put it a little bit more in context, about 20 million people in this country that will have some form of allergy, and so that's about a third of the population. If you're looking at something like food allergy, then that's a lesser percentage, and I would say for children that's probably about 5%, and adults that's probably about 7%, although it is difficult to try and estimate the numbers because diagnosis of food allergy can be done in different ways, and there's also self-reported allergy. So for instance, 20% of the population might actually think they've got food allergy, but although the numbers are much less.
And we have seen some really sort of tragic cases that hit the headlines, haven't we?
Yes, there have been a number of tragedies, Tony, and I'm glad that you've brought that up, because really the reason that we've done the GP with extended roles is to increase accessibility for people and their families to get good advice about allergies from their general practitioners, from the health system. But we mustn't forget that people with allergies encounter in society a number of different barriers. And so it's not just the GPs that need to be more educated in allergy. It's, for instance, people in the travel industry, the shops that are selling food and restaurants. And so from the deaths, unfortunately, as I've mentioned before, the fatalities have remained stable. But from the deaths that we have learned, there's specific learning, and the coroner does a prevention of future deaths report. And they've recommended better training, for instance, in schools. And the Natasha Allergy Research Foundation has helped our understanding and done fantastic work in campaigning for better laws on food allergy labelling.
And how can the GP were role feed into this and improve the situation where we have, you know, very long waiting lists in secondary care when people get to the end of GP expertise?
If you look at some of the allergy reports, they're sort of self-explanatory in their titles: allergy, the unmet need, and allergy still not meeting the unmet need. So about 8 to 10% of patients in general practice are seen with an allergic problem. It can be quite complex, and you really do need to have good training. But the GP with extended role recognises that you can't actually see somebody quickly in general practice and cover all their allergy problems, and you shouldn't be expected to. So although all the reports called for more specialists, yes, that is important, but the GP with extended role is a special role which would appeal to portfolio GPs that actually marks out and gives you specific times and trainings to see these more complex allergy patients in primary care. The document itself that we've created looks at different areas. So for instance, we know that a lot of patients might present with idiopathic angioedema and urticaria, and that could be well seen by a GP with extended role. And often they think they have a food allergy, but actually that's a totally different condition, and so that needs appropriate investigations and management. They could also be dealing with food allergy, and what we need to put in place alongside the GP with extended roles is really good pathways and referral guidance and triage mechanisms, so that the amount of patients that are in primary care could be increased by the GP with extended role. Drug allergy is another one where 90% of drug allergy probably isn't drug allergy at all, particularly penicillin allergy. So it's helping understand what those drug allergy labels are, referring the ones to specialist centres that need that. There's research work being done whether that potentially there could be some delabeling of low risk ones in the community, but that's research and that could be developed in the future. And then there's other cases like venom allergy, for instance. Some of the venom allergy patients may not be referred to specialist units because GPs might not be aware that there is specific immunotherapy for them. And there's a lot of other conditions that a GP with an extended role could take on to form that midway between the specialist unit. There'll still be cases that will need to be referred, but if they're working within that team, they can work up patients and sit within the triage team because their holistic understanding of what allergy is and how you manage it, they can understand what they could deal with in the community, what their colleagues can, and what needs to come to specialist care. So I think that they could actually reduce pressure on all levels throughout the system. And most importantly, they increase access for the patients that are waiting a long time.
Yes, absolutely. It's really important, isn't it, that GPs with an extended role anywhere are sort of embedded in the team rather than kind of working in isolation. So yeah, there's a clear unmet need and barriers experienced to by GPs who are referring. And I think when you were creating the framework along with the RCGP, you also looked at respiratory and dermatology frameworks too, because there's a bit of overlap sometimes in symptoms.
Yeah, so dermatology were quite fast out on this with the GPs in the community, and they've got a number of GPs with extended role. You could say that there is some crossover work, and we have been discussing with the primary care of dermatology about some shared educational sessions. But it's great to see, and the same with the Respiratory Society about rhinitis. They have well-established GPs with extended roles, for instance, with asthma and COPD. And sometimes it's linking it up. For instance, we might see a patient with rhinitis, polycontrolled asthma, and food anaphylaxis, plus or minus eczema. So there's quite a lot of which those different societies and those roles could do. Plus or minus gastroenterology, they might see some patients. So there's shared learning between all these roles. But what's good is that the other roles are well established. They've got good community clinics. And what we see as a GP with an extended role to be doing, Tony, is that it's not just clinically seeing the patients. They are clinical leaders. They should be involved in management. If they have an interest, they should be supported to be involved in research. They should be teaching their peers, and they should be involved with the other areas across. For instance, one of the things I think is very difficult in paediatrics and in the community, and quite traumatic sometimes if parent has a child who's crying all the time with severe eczema and might have different symptoms as well, whether they're concerned about milk allergy, for instance. And often they might be seeing a GP four or five times before a diagnosis of that is made, or it may not be milk allergy at all. But the main thing here is that if you had a GP with an extended role in the community who was working alongside a dietitian and also had access to a specialist unit, is that those parents, those moms and dads with a child who's obviously not sleeping and obviously crying at different times, is that some of those questions could be resolved. And quite a lot of those families are left for a long time with uncertainty. So yes, there's a lot of cross-cutting between the GP with the extended roles. But I think if we all work together, for instance, you want to optimise your eczema control, whether that's a dermatology GP or whether that's an allergy GP, it doesn't really matter. But strategically, you also need to have your eczema nurses out in the community and your dietitian and probably a psychologist as well if you've got severe food allergy, because there's a number of things there that are really quite frightening for people that need to be addressed.
Yeah, it's definitely good for us as a GP to have that holistic view, which we take from our normal GP training and to work with other professionals. And this sort of brings us on to all the changes that are happening in England with the neighbourhood aspect of the NHS 10-year plan. For those in Scotland, Wales, or Northern Ireland, it will be the sort of equivalent commissioning terms will apply. And so we have quite a lot of e-learning on the basics of allergy knowledge, and we're not going to try and cover that here. But just to think again about what a GP might see. So you've talked about a couple of things such as venom immunotherapy and where there's various different types of allergic disease. What other conditions or investigations might be useful in their role?
So I think we could just look at the basics, which would be helpful to everybody and some GPs doing already. So you want optimal management of rhinitis, an assessment of whether that was allergic or not, advice on maximal treatment for it, and if they're not responding to maximal dose treatment, then possibility of referral for immunotherapy, for instance. So rhinitis is one, and optimal management then clearly of asthma. Again, crossover with the GP and extended role in respiratory, but our patients tend to be multi-system disease. So if you get your rhinitis right, then your asthma tends to be better controlled. That's the one airway. And then that's actually quite important to get your asthma controlled if this person has food anaphylaxis, because if their asthma is uncontrolled and they happen to eat something by mistake, then they're already on the back foot. So there's something about getting optimal control. There's also something about educating patients about cofactors. Cofactors are something that can augment anaphylaxis, things about exercise, alcohol, and stress, which at the moment there are gaps in that care and it's not particularly happening. I have a particular interest in teenagers, and so I would quite like to do a teenage clinic, for instance, because a lot of patients sort of have a one-stop clinic and might be discharged and they're in their early adult years. That's probably the time when they're pretty vulnerable. But there's quite a common allergy called pollen food syndrome, which could be well managed in primary care. Sometimes there's symptoms with nuts that would probably need specialist review because there's possibility of a nut allergy. And if they've got severe symptoms with fruits and vegetables, then again, that would need to be reviewed by a specialist in case you've got a true fruit allergy. So there's something about risk assessment, seeing what is and having the confidence to recognise, because a lot of allergies pattern recognition of what can be managed in primary care and what can't.
Yes, that's been a huge change since I've qualified this idea that you shouldn't avoid giving kids maybe from atopic families possible allergens. That all sounds really useful, and I think they could probably maybe also help with some of the documentation for those with severe allergies, allergy plans for schools and things like that.
The British Society of Allergy and Clinical Immunology do actually have an allergy action plan on their website. And you can go into that and you can download it and you can put in what you think the diagnosis is. One of the things that we have written with that British Society is an adrenaline guidance for prescribing and management of anaphylaxis in primary care. And we also highlight those action plans because if you think a patient has anaphylaxis, then they need to be referred. That's just a given. But the allergy action plan, you can start filling in and you can prescribe them with adrenaline with the proviso that somebody may change that diagnosis if they do further tests. So something about safety netting before they go, which is showing them how to use the adrenaline devices, giving them a diagnosis, telling them what to avoid, signposting to allergy charities, Anaphylaxis UK and Allergy UK, fantastic sources of information. But these allergy action plans, for instance, in paediatrics, might change. The child might outgrow the allergy. There may be other treatments in place, such as immunotherapy. There might be all sorts of things. So a GP with an extended role, if they are sufficiently qualified, might be somebody who is able to look at those action plans, which should be filled, in fairness, in a specialist unit. And in time, they may be somewhere on the NHS app in a digital form, which would be accessible to everyone. So there's something about confidence in putting the diagnosis in. There's no point putting information on an allergy action plan if you haven't done the test and you're not sure on the diagnosis, but they are useful for patients. Probably what's more useful for patients as well is going through scenario training about what might happen should you have a reaction.
Yes, absolutely, because it's a very scary thing for patients and for their parents. So let's talk a bit about the framework in detail. So unlike some of the other GP were frameworks, this is actually hosted on the BSACI site, but the easiest way to find it is probably to go to the GP with extended role framework on the RCGP website and then just click on allergy, and that will take you directly to the framework on the BSACI site. So what would you say, what advice would you give to someone who would like to develop an extended role in allergy, maybe has an interest but no qualifications or anything, and says, how do I start?
So what you do need and what's recognised is you need to have a mix of both theory and clinical experience and expertise. And you also need peer review of your work, and you need to be able to demonstrate that you have understood that and that you've made some progress and reflection. So the thing that's probably the most difficult for people to access is the clinical experience in the unit. Now, the BSACI has both adult and pediatric networks. And what we're trying to do, because we're learning from this as well, we're just piloting the GP extended role. We've got about five people that are interested, many of whom are pretty well experienced and qualified. So what we're trying to set is signposts that people then have two flow charts. So we're going to have an initial flow chart, which is, I have no experience, either theoretical or practical, what do I do? And that's the level. And then we can say, okay, well, these are the theory courses you might want to go to. So there are different courses run by Imperial and Southampton and Newcastle, and also the Algae Academy about theory. And you might not want to take it up to a master's degrees, but there are diplomas and there are other types of certificates that you can do. So that's signposting to theory. But the hardest block that I've come across that people have said to me is they've actually gone and done the master's and then they can't find the work or the clinical placements. So we're going to try and then connect them to and map them out to these pediatric and adult networks who are actually short staff anyway, and to see whether we can get them clinically placed to then get that experience to get the teaching and get signed off for skin prick tests to show that they can understand what the blood tests are and the components are, and that somebody's looking at the letters and to show that they've got an understanding of complex cases and triage. So it's giving them experience in a protected environment that we think is quite important. We have already, I would say we've actually got a fair number of GPs that are already working in allergy units. And those people may have, 5 or 10 years or 3 years working in allergy units alongside consultant colleagues who are very happy with the standard of care to what they're working with. And some of those have done the theory already, they've done a master's, they've done a diploma, or they're halfway through it. Well, some of them haven't, and they're sort of applying and saying, well, I've done the 5 years in the unit, and I've just started this course. So it's really quite individual, but I would say the biggest is clinical experience and then getting the work after that. So what we're looking at is writing up job descriptions, what an ideal job description would be, and then how to present yourself to a system which is, the commissioning system is rapidly changing. So then how would you present yourself either to a neighborhood, which is a population of 30 to 50,000, saying, I could make a difference here because I think I could see this number of patients and I could manage them in this way and I could refer. And so we already have examples of good examples of GPs extended role. Actually, Mark Levy, who's well known for his asthma work, was a GP with extended role in allergy, and he did a project in London. So we do have examples. Not many people write up their work, but where it has happened, they've got good patient feedback and they've had good explanation of their conditions.
And I think you're bringing a workshop to next year's RCGP conference.
Yeah, we're planning on doing that. So we're doing this in baby steps, Tony, because that's the only way you can do it. I'm not aware of another framework like this. EAACI have got one for allied health, which I was part of the task force at looking at that on competencies. So we're going to pilot the first view this through this year, and we got an abstract at our conference, and then we thought for the RCGP we would go and show ourselves and see whether anybody was interested. And we also know that the other primary care societies generally pitch up there as well, so we will hopefully meet them. What I do find interesting, Tony, is that a lot of GPs are now interested in portfolio working, and we're hoping to meet both young trainee GPs, newly qualified, and ones that have been there for some time, and just see what they think. See whether they've got any ideas of how we can do this better, and see whether they're interested in it.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic and definitely an evolving role. So, I think that's probably all we've got time for today. Massive thank you to Liz for joining us to discuss the GP Work Framework for Allergy. For those who are interested in learning more, as I said, if you go to the RCGP website to the page on GPs with extended role and you click on the allergy one, that will take you straight to the framework on the BSACI site. And if you want more information from the BSACI, either about theory training or about finding colleagues in your area or finding clinics to sit in, you can email them on gpwer@bsaci.org. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please have a look at the RCGP website or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to other podcasts on many aspects of allergy and other subjects, and have a look on the RCGP site at our other e-learning on allergy. Thank you very much and goodbye.